Welcome to Modern Digital Applications, a podcast for corporate decision makers and executives looking to create or extend their digital business with the help of modern applications, processes, and software strategy. Now, welcome your host, a recognized industry thought leader in cloud computing and published author, bringing over 30 years of experience, Lee Acheson.
In this episode, I'm very happy to present an interview I had with my friend, Ken Garanovich. Ken and I were traveling together and we had an open evening. We used the time to record a discussion on a topic that's very important to both of us, the topic of risk management. This episode is an audio summary of that interview. And then, what is the history of the word cloud? How did it first come into usage and when did it come into usage in popular culture? This is Risk Management on Modern Digital Applications.
And now our main story on Modern Digital Applications.
Ken Garanovich was the Executive Vice President and GM for Product at New Relic. In early 2019, Ken and I were in Boston together for an event, and we recorded an interview discussion about risk management in modern digital applications. Both Ken and I have experience dealing with risk management issues in current and past assignments. I discuss risk management in my book, Architecting for Scale. Ken used a very similar risk management technique in his past corporate management gigs. In this interview, we compare notes and make recommendations on best practices for risk management that everyone can use. At the time of the interview, Ken and I had just flown into Boston after our FutureStack conference in Toronto, Canada. We had just finished rehearsals for the Boston conference, which was scheduled for the next day. The interview was recorded live, but without an audience, in the conference ballroom on January 9th, 2019. Have a listen.
Lee, it's great to be here with you at FutureStack Boston.
Great as always to be right. here.
Or just like, Boston. Was it yesterday we were in Toronto?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So, you know, one of the things, I know we both talked to a lot of customers, and, you know, one of the questions is, where do I get started, right? You know, I've got some things that are working and not working, and what are kind of patterns that we see in enterprises in our own personal experience? And, you know, we have an awesome, you know, opportunity to talk to a lot of companies in digital transformation, but what is something that I could kind of go do portable tomorrow,
right?
So I know we both have some thoughts around that, but, you know, what is something that a company could do tomorrow, kind of, where do I start?
One of the things I like to tell people is it's very easy to wrap your mind around the idea of risk management and how do you build a risk matrix to track the issues and the risks you have within your system. And so I like to tell people that because it gets them started thinking about what their system is doing, you know, what are the problems it has and how to deal with them. But it gets them thinking beyond just the problem resolution mode and then more into a pro and con and risk management and what's the benefit of fixing this versus the benefit of mitigating it. And so I like talking about that because it gets conversations going within the company about the sorts of things that are important to them. So creating a risk matrix, I think, is an important first step for anybody who's thinking about trying to improve their availability, trying to improve their scalability, trying to improve their or you modernize your application in many different ways. It's just get a grip on the risk that is already in your system today and what you're currently going to do in order to manage that risk.
Yeah, no, 100% agreed. I remember there was in a previous role, it's a couple hundred million dollar project that was going and kind of having some challenges, and we put together a very similar program, a risk matrix.
Right.
So I thought it might be helpful. People are watching this. Let's kind of double click into what that might look like.
Sure.
From my perspective, I think the key questions that somebody should ask. So I think really they should go out into the organization. I think it should be bottoms up, agreed,
absolutely.
Not top down.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not people at the top of the organization giving you
bottoms
the answers.
Up.
It's bottoms up at the team level. And I'll give you my shot and tell me what I miss. But I think it's, you know, first of all is, you know, what are the things, list, you know, and again, not in extreme technical detail, what are the things in a list format that could kind of go bump in the night?
Yeah.
And then
people already have an idea of the things that keep them up at night, that they worry about, that they think about on a regular basis. And that's a good place to start with that list.
That makes sense. And so bottoms up, teams, just a list. Hey, what are the things, and really be more inclusive in those things, like those things that, you know, well, maybe it's going to happen, maybe it's not, just all the things that we think are some sort of risk.
Yeah.
right? Those things you knew you should have been doing, but features were prioritized over it. You know, what are those things? You know, or maybe it's a design flaw, whatever it is, right? And then I think the next piece is really likelihood of that thing happening.
Yeah, so I tell people they need to think about two values with every risk item they come up with. You know, put them literally in a spreadsheet. Make a spreadsheet, literally list them line by line, individual risk in the spreadsheet, and they need to think about two values, severity and likelihood. How likely is this thing to happen? And if it does happen, how much impact will I have with you? And they should do that before they think about mitigation. So if the problem happens without any thought processes whatsoever, how likely is it to happen and how bad will it be for the system? And then you work on mitigations, you think about what you can do to mitigate the problem without necessarily removing it, and then you're gonna come up with a new severity and a new likelihood and hopefully be lower in some, either lower in severity or lower in likelihood.
Right, and I think that goes back to the solutioning part, but just again, the beginning process is really just listing them. So it's those, that list of things, I like that, you know, likelihood and risk. And I think it's important to share that what we've seen, and what's great is this is not only our personal experience, but we've seen this a lot of companies,
right.
Is, you know, because some people say, well, should I score it 1 to 10? And, you know, I think it's really like low, medium, high. You know,
keep it
simple, low, medium, high.
Yeah. You're going to run into people who want to be highly analytic and they want to score from 1 to 100 and want to argue about 35 versus 36
exactly.
And all that sort of thing.
They want to throw points. And
exactly.
All kinds of, it's not an agile sprint.
The other thing I have seen works though is the CARD approach, right? If you really want to have a more rigorous process and then just come up with a high, medium, low, something like similar to what's used in sprints where you might have three playing cards, an ace, a 5 and a 10 or something like that. And everyone, that's all they have is three options. And everyone just votes in the number and then they use whatever is the most likely number there.
Agreed.
But that's only the people that have to have an analytic solution.
Agreed. So whether you use cards or you just say low, medium, high, at the end of the day, keep it simple, three versions, have everybody throw it. It's not about a big debate.
Exactly.
Right? We're not at this stage, we're not trying to get into that detail. It's a high level description,
right.
Risk, likelihood. Now the other part I like is this scenario currently instrumented? Do you have observability? If this thing happened, whatever you're describing, would you know from an automated system perspective, or would customers tell you?
Yeah, that's a fantastic way to think about it. Is, you know, it's one thing to know that if something goes wrong, what's going to happen. It's another thing to know that you will know when it happens. And that's certainly when you get into the mitigation, you need to know that, right? But even before that, being able to measure and understand when that risk is occurring is a critical aspect, especially of your highly likely risk. Well, actually, I shouldn't say that. It's probably the best way to describe it is your most severe risks. Whether they're likely or not, the most severe risks are the ones you want to know about when they happen.
So kicking this off in enterprise, obviously it's hard, so you need to have top-down leadership say this is important exercise
yes.
that we're going to do. What's the item? Describe what is this thing? Risk,
mm-hmm.
likelihood,
severity.
Monitored, not monitored. So
right.
Risk, likelihood, severity, monitor, not monitored. All right, what else? Anything else? Or is it just that's it?
Well, coming up with that list is going to get you, you know, 80% of the way to what you need, because it's going to get you thinking about what's going on. That's the most important thing. Because what's going to happen is the engineers in the room, as they go through that, their mind is instantly going to be going to the next thing, which is mitigation, right?
Right.
What do you need to do about mitigation? They're already going to be thinking about that, whether you want them to or not. They're already going to be thinking about that.
But I think for the beginning phase,
that's all you need. That's it. If you get nothing but that in the first meeting or the first couple of meetings, that's all you need, and your world is a whole lot better just simply having that list.
Right. So one other thought that I want to add, and then let's talk about the phase two. So phase one is really making the list, scoring it, you know, again, severity, risk, monitoring. The other part I just wanted to throw out there, see if you agree, is I think that when you have an RCA or an incident issue, you know, process, that you should always check to see, is this thing on the risk register? And if it's not,
it should be added, and maybe a little rigor around why it wasn't,
why it
in
wasn't
the first
added,
place.
Yeah.
Because maybe a team wasn't as aggressive, they didn't want to put everything in. Because going back to no surprise, I always one of my favorite phrases, surprises, not a fan of giving nor receiving. But I think if you have the risk matrix and it's done right, anything that goes bump in the night probably should be on the risk matrix.
Yeah, exactly. You know, every time you have an outage or an incident of any sort, you end up with some form of postmortem, whether it's formalized or not, some sort of postmortem afterwards. One of the key questions has to be, did you know about this ahead of time? You know, and that comes back to the risk matrix. Because if you didn't know about it, that's a problem, and you need to add it to the risk matrix so you understand that risk. It's an important risk for you to know to come on. But if you didn't know about it, was the severity that actually happened, did it match what you think it should be? Or were you wrong in your estimates? So you can gain a lot of knowledge when an incident occurs that can help you with that risk matrix.
All right, so good. Yeah. So as a leader, I've told my organization to do this. They've done the process. Yep. I now have this matrix. From execution, what do I do next? I think there's two things from my perspective. As you look at the high highs, right? High likelihood, high risk. And in some cases, that requires rewriting. You know, might be something really big. But the high highs that you could fix, I think you prioritize.
Yes.
The other part I'm a big believer is if you have, you know, you always have business partners, is you take that risk matrix and that's your next meeting.
Yes.
At the executive level, and you say, hey, listen, we've created this risk matrix. Here's the things that are high, high. Here's the things that are medium, medium, or whatever it is. And as a company, we think one of two things. We should focus on fixing the high, high, or we should all hold hands and say we're willing, for whatever reason, maybe it's a prioritization issue, to take this risk as a company, and we all have open eyes, blameless culture, and we're willing to take that risk together.
Yes, and that's really critical too, because you're not gonna remove all the risk. You're not gonna fix all the problems, and nor is that necessarily the right investment to be, to go off and do that. You know, you want to, the right level of risk is whatever your organization is comfortable with. And your organization is the extended organization. The business value, what the business cost is of the risk, what the development cost is, all those things have to be fit together into it. But you once you know what your risk is, you have to evaluate whether you and the culture of your company and your customers and the business that you provide are comfortable with that level of risk or not. And anything that's in the not range, things you're not comfortable with, need to be addressed right away. You have to either mitigate or remove them. But the other things is like, you know, if you're comfortable with that level of risk, you're comfortable with what's going on there, it's not necessarily a good investment to work on resolving those things. You know, because there are going to be higher priority issues that you want to work on.
Right.
They're going to be below
no
the
surprises.
Fold. Exactly.
The other part is many companies think from a funding perspective, I look at this as a living document. My thoughts are you should probably run this exercise formally at least twice a year.
Yes.
Whenever you have incidents, those things should be added to it. So you should be an active.
It's part of your incident response process.
Correct. Yeah. And most companies fund on an annual basis. My perspective, a lot of times people forget about risk when it comes to funding. And in some companies, it becomes kind of what's the shiny object. That's where we're investing the money. And so I think if companies then take that and technology leaders bring that risk matrix to those annual budget discussions, again, removing any kind of surprises, everybody's clear on where we're investing and why we're investing.
Exactly, yes.
You know, so it's not just what we like.
So it's definitely a feedback into your budgeting process. But it's also at a much lower level, it's also feedback into your sprint planning process.
Totally agree.
You know, it's like, you know, what can you accomplish this, you know, this sprint, and how much do you want to spend on doing risk management activity versus new features or other problems.
And the high highs.
Exactly.
You know, many enterprises, you know, if they're really focused on the customer experience, say high highs unless it's a full rewrite, you know, because again, sometimes you come into an organization, there's a lot of technical debt built up.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're not in that situation, high highs, you know, I think most of the high performing organizations say, we're going to stop, we're going to fix, and we're going to address those things.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
But the one important thing to consider is fixing it doesn't have to mean resolving it. It doesn't have to mean removing the risk.
Mitigating.
It might be mitigating.
You might have took it from a high likelihood to a medium.
To a medium, right.
Or you might take it from a high impact
to a medium,
medium or low.
Right. And just doing that. So now what you've done is you haven't removed that it's going to happen, but you've brought it back in to the comfort level of your organization. And once it's within the comfort level of your organization as far as what the risk is, either likelihood or severity, that's a very successful place to be. So you don't have to remove the risk. You want to be able to put a plan in place for what you do when that happens. And if you're comfortable with that plan, and if it ends up lowering it far enough, you're comfortable with where it is on the list, no reason to go any further than that.
And you and I have seen this at hundreds of global companies. So
yeah.
From a best practice, it really makes a lot of sense to have a risk matrix,
yes,
to do it semi-annually. Again, focus on what's the high level, what's the item,
yep,
what's the what that can go wrong, what's the likelihood, what's the risk, do you have it monitored or not? RCA process, make sure you check to see is it in there.
Yep.
If it's not in there, why? And then rinse and repeat and use that in the budgeting process.
Yes.
Anything else we should add to anybody using this?
Now, the only thing I can say is make sure you do it. We talked about it being a bottoms-up process, but individual teams need to own their own risk matrices, and they need to bubble up to high-level lists that are known at the high levels of the organization.
Critical, I agree. The initiative to do it, because it's important, needs to come top-down.
Yes.
The actual work and what's on it
is bottom-up.
I'd like to thank Ken for his involvement in this interview and for the insights he provided to the very important topic of risk management. Additionally, thank you to Ken for providing the recording equipment he and I used for the interview.
Like what we do? Share this on your socials and tell everyone.
This is Tech Tappers, little bits of tech here on Modern Digital Applications.
What is the history of the term cloud as it is used in cloud computing? Well, that's an interesting question, and unfortunately, there are probably as many answers as there are people who work in the cloud. But most people who have looked into this subject believe the term originally came in the 1980s from the telephone companies of the day. Network engineers who drew diagrams of portions of their network would often draw a big blob to indicate a portion of their network that they weren't dealing with at the time. Rather than drawing those blobs as simple circles, squares, or rectangles, since those icons represented real entries in their diagrams, instead they drew the blob as a rounded set of segments interconnected that made it look nebulous and nondescript in shape. It was, after all, supposed to represent a nebulous and nondescript part of the network. In fact, this nebulous and nondescript shape looked like a cloud, so much so that these engineers started talking about the part of the network that they weren't focusing on at the time, the part external to their area of concern, as being out in the cloud. This usage expanded into software architects as they built their software diagrams and flowcharts as well. They used a symbol for a very similar purpose. The term cloud computing, though, is much more recent. Some would argue that early server farms were really cloud computing, but the term really wasn't popularly used back then. Some would say that Google Compute Platform, GCP, provided some of the earliest cloud computing technology to the industry. Others would say that Salesforce.com was a major early creator of cloud technology. But I think the real mainstream usage of the term cloud computing among technical professionals was popularized with the start of Amazon Web Services. AWS mainstreamed cloud computing, and hence mainstreamed the term cloud computing. This happened in the mid-2000s. But software running in the cloud was still something that was reserved for technical people to talk about. Mainstream non-techie people didn't yet know what the term cloud was all about. This was certainly my personal experience. You see, I was working at AWS in the early days, and I had a hard time telling my non-techie friends what I did for a living. They just didn't know what I meant by cloud computing. They didn't know what I meant when I said I worked in the cloud. They didn't understand what the cloud was. Like many of the changes in modern popular tech culture, that changed once Apple Computer came into the picture. On October 12, 2011, Apple introduced iCloud to the Apple universe. And overnight, the word cloud was part of mainstream culture. Those friends of mine who couldn't understand what I was doing when I said I worked in the cloud now understood, at least at some level, what the cloud was all about. Apple brought the term cloud to the mainstream. I know I will likely get many people who disagree with my analysis on who invented the term cloud and who popularized it. That's because there really isn't a single right answer. But I do believe that the biggest events in the history of the term cloud computing were first the network engineers, then AWS, then Apple Computer. Each of those three groups played a role in bringing the word cloud into our everyday lives.
Thank you for listening to Modern Digital Applications with Lee Acheson. Lee helps executives keep up with industry trends and best practices in cloud computing, application scaling, DevOps, and applications modernization in order to stay in front of disruptive influencers. Subscribe to this podcast to ensure you get each new episode as it's available. Visit mdacast.com for all the resources and publications from Lee and his team. Thank you for tuning in to today's show.